Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the shape-shifting master of evil, Kyle Krause.
Gotta go back. Back to the past. Samurai Kyle. What's up, Ian? How you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. How are you?
Hanging in there. What's going on? Anything special? Anything fun?
Well, we announced our big push with all things Bumblecast related. Bumblecast Gaming Live now runs every Friday, strictly for patrons. We have seen a small uptick in the number of patrons, including one very special guest we're going to get to in just a minute. If we can get to 50 patrons, the big incentive there is we're going to get T-Lopes, the composer for Sonic Mania, musical genius and all-around really cool guy, to remix the Bumblecast theme. And add that to the circulation of things we have. We've got a number of other incentives that we'll be doing on the Patreon. So it's been a very Bumblecasty week.
Yes. We're trying.
How about you? What are you doing?
I'm just been working with you, trying to make things more awesome for the Bumblecast. You know, we're coming up with some cool ideas. I think we'll be doing a lot of fun and exciting stuff, including this episode. So, because this is a bit of a special episode, and not just because it's number 42, which is a milestone in and of itself, because that means this episode is the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Exactly.
Yes, but even still, we've got some cool stuff going on.
One of the cool things we have going on every single episode is, of course, the Bumble Raffle, wherein somebody gets to win a free signed comic from me. If you're a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every single drawing. Otherwise, just email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com and you enter in every single episode and you get put in for the same draw as everybody else. So this episode's winner is...
Zephyr Flame!
Congratulations, Zephyr. We're going to get in touch with you and figure out where we're going to send that book. Because we're both really busy, if you don't hear from us immediately, please, please say, where's my book? Because we've had a couple of people fall through the cracks that way. So we want you to get your prize because we really appreciate your patronage and listening to the show and just want to make you happy.
Yes. Zephyr is one of the true Patreon OGs, I think.
Oh, yeah. Been around forever.
He's been around for quite a while. So thank you very much for your support, dude. Hope you enjoy that book.
Speaking of patrons, one of our newest is joining us today. Everyone give a big hand and welcome to Chevelle.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're so happy to have you. What brings you to the Bumblecast?
Well, I just really wanted to support you guys. I've been a big fan of Ian's work for a while, and I'm so glad you guys accepted my $25 gift certificate to Arby's. I didn't know that was all it took to get on this podcast, but it's really good to know.
Bribing us with food is a very easy way to get us to do things.
Bribing us in general is pretty easy.
Yeah, but food especially, we're kind of bad about food.
Well, of course, I'm joking. It'll take a lot more than food certificates to get on.
And because I know there's going to be one or two people out there who takes that seriously. No, we didn't get bribed with food. It is a joke. That's the joke. He's funny. We make with the laugh time on show, please.
Yes. Maybe. Anyway.
We try at least.
Yes. Yes.
So when we were talking with Chevelle and setting up this episode, asked what in particular she'd like to talk about, and she said
Samurai Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that's my line.
We're mixing up a little this time.
That's fine. That's fine. You can take it. I'll allow it.
So, since you are the guest, let's start off. How long have you been watching Jack? What is it that appeals to you? Have you been enjoying season 5? All that happy hoopla.
I've been a fan since it aired back on Cartoon Network for the very first time. I loved every episode, and even though it's been a long time since I've seen the first four seasons, there's some parts of it that's still clear in my memory, especially the pacing of some episodes, how there were just really quiet moments, and there was just things that I didn't normally see in other cartoons at the time, especially how well it was stylized, the composition of the scenes, all of it was really sucked me in. And I didn't exactly pinpoint out why until I was much older and just thinking back, it's like, oh, that was a really gorgeous looking episode, or that was a really fun episode, and so on and so forth. Season 5 has been just amazing. I was a little uneasy when I heard it was coming back. I just thought, say, we're going to make this a little darker, but not so much. I was just like, okay, I know it's going to be on Toonami, Adult Swim, but I hope they won't go too far across in the line of what they can do and not do. But so far, I say it's pretty much blown me out the water, especially those first 3 episodes. So what do you guys think?
Kyle?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't come to Samurai Jack until quite a bit after the show had aired originally, but I did catch up with it on Netflix a couple of years ago. So I definitely enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed this show's style. Essentially, just, it's a very dialogue-light show, but it conveys a lot without dialogue. There's so much, the characters are so expressive and really just entertaining that it shows through without dialogue. The show clearly doesn't need dialogue to convey a story at all. And that has been kept up with season 5. Season 5 is definitely a lot darker. For some reason, a lot of it reminds me quite a bit of Logan, the recent X-Men movie. I don't know, maybe it's just because it's an older, gruffer Samurai Jack, or if it's just kind of the self-loathing that he's going through. It's definitely quite a bit darker. It seems like what they did was, what they did for the new Samurai Jack season was they wanted to, more than anything, appeal to fans of the original show. It's like they aged the show with the audience, with the show's original audience. They didn't necessarily want to appeal to a new audience. They knew that there were fans of this show that enjoyed it back in, what was it, 2003, 2004, when it aired originally.
Thanks, now I feel really old.
Something like that. So basically, like 14, 15 years ago, they knew, like, okay, our core audience 14, 15 years ago is now a lot older. So we need to also make this,
I can't believe it's been that long.
We need to make this show a lot more mature too. So, and I think they succeeded at doing that, where some other properties have kind of failed at making their shows darker and grittier just for the sake of it. So luckily it doesn't seem like the new Samurai Jack has just done it just because it actually serves the story. And there's still some really good lighthearted moments, like most of the stuff with Aku. It's still just like, he's just silly. But he's clearly going through kind of his own inner turmoil, in a sense. But so that's about what I think of it. What about you, Ian?
I've been with it since the beginning and really, really loved and appreciated the fact that it's not your standard cartoon or a standard action cartoon. It takes a ton of risks. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it might err a little bit on the side of being artsy, where I think it could be a little more concise in the storytelling. But overall, the fact that it does something so different and it does it so brazenly is wonderful and refreshing. And I really enjoy the fact that season 5 has stuck to its guns in that regard. It doesn't feel like here is our attempts at continuing Jack. It just feels like here's Jack, here's more Jack. And mm-hmm. like you said, they aged it up with the principal audience instead of trying to create something new to appeal to the brand name recognition.
Right.
I think one of the most impressive things is the use of sound and music mm-hmm. to really convey the moment. And one of the few scenes that really sticks to you in the head is in the initial, what was it, a 3-part season opening for the season 1? It was something mammoth. And when it's Jack standing alone against the seemingly endless horde of Beetleborgs, and the fight just goes on and on and on. And instead of feeling tedious, it just becomes more and more oppressive. Like you're starting to feel the weight of just how much he's fighting. And then I guess it's maybe 2/3 through this absolute massacre. And the one robot just takes this kind of hesitant step backwards. And Jack, who hasn't said more than 10 words in this entire hour and a half, says, "No, there's no escape." You're like, "Oh." And here's where things turn around, isn't it? And then it goes from there. It's just moments like that stick with you. The one that I think is maybe everybody's favorite, or at least one of the top 10, is the one with the bounty hunters towards the end of season 4, where the whole episode is built around these mm-hmm. various weirdo bounty hunters coming together and combining their plans to take out Jack. And in the space of a single water droplet, he takes them all out. He's on the screen for maybe a fifth of the episode. Not a single line of dialogue. And he is the epitome of the warrior badass. It's just, oh, I love that one. That one in particular, I think, is wonderfully paced and directed and structured. And just, it's good.
Seriously, geeking out.
Yeah.
Which is
that's a good show.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
Not
I
really.
Feel
a little no.
bit, 'cause I feel like season 5 started off really strong, and I feel like it's kind of lost its momentum and direction. And I had a lot of problems with the last episode, in part because it went in a direction that I wasn't expecting, and that's entirely on me, because you know it's not my show. They're going to write it the way they want to. But I felt like the whole show is built on Jack overcoming insurmountable odds. Whether it's he needs to learn a new technique, he needs to think his way around the problem, or he just has spent so much time training and fighting that he has achieved a level of skill that allows him to overcome these otherwise incredible opponents. It's all about Jack's accomplishments and what he has done to get there. With the last episode, and if you haven't seen it, spoiler warning, red flag, look out. The weight of Jack's self-perceived failure drives him to almost commit ritualistic suicide, which I thought was an incredible story arc for him. And up until this episode, I thought they handled it very, very well. The problem for me is, at the end, the decision doesn't really feel like it comes from him. It comes from the motivational speech from Ashi. And that in and of itself isn't the problem, because her character arc is kind of the embodiment of all the good he's done for the world, and he has reversed her, who's spent an entire lifetime of being indoctrinated against him. But I felt like the whole episode of her revisiting all of these past characters and plot lines, which was really neat. I love the callback. But it felt a little hollow that it was just her at the end. Like, the whole point is supposed to be Jack sees that he was wrong, that he may not have defeated a coup, but he has been doing good for 50 years now. I feel like it would have been a much stronger moment if each of the characters that Ashi met came with her to some degree. Like, the first thing is those big bully Muppet-looking things. They're beasts of burden. What if one of them goes with Ashi to help her travel further, faster to find Jack? The archers who were saved by Jack because he showed them mercy. What if one came with them to help scout ahead? The rave party, they use their phones to social network, help track down Jack, so that you have this small enclave of people saying, "No, Jack, you changed our lives. You made the difference." And it's not just Ashi, so it feels like it's a culmination of everything Jack has done. Maybe they couldn't do it for budget reasons, maybe they couldn't do it for timing or whatever, but I feel like just Ashi kind of diminished the impact of the revelation, and I never felt like Jack fully came around to it. It was more that, okay, now he's over being sad. Maybe that's me overanalyzing, but that's just my two cents.
Because I talked about it before on another podcast, but hearing that is actually pretty interesting. I haven't really thought of it until now, as after seeing the episode. It did feel like towards the end, unsatisfying, but there's just something about it. I just wish there was a little bit more to it. And I think you nailed it on the head, what was bothering me after I saw the episode.
Yeah, it seemed a tad bit rushed, and that might just be because of the format of, you know, a 22-minute cartoon.
How many episodes are in this season? I can't remember. I think it's...
Just 10.
I think it's 10. Yeah, not many.
And that was episode 6, I believe?
Yeah, 6 episodes. Mm-hmm. So, a very limited time, so that is probably why they didn't go something like that, or obviously they may not have just thought of it, or whatever. But yeah, I would agree with you, Ian, that that definitely didn't kill it for me. I'm going to keep watching it.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's no... Yeah, definitely doesn't ruin the show or anything, but, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, they could have done that... Could have approached that a little bit differently, maybe a little bit better.
That, and I was a little disappointed with the revelation of what the mysterious samurai was. Because, you know, you have this phantom being in the background, and you can't tell, is it part of Jack's hallucinations? Is it a memory of someone who bested him in the past, and that's why he lost his sword? What's his deal? And he was just kind of there to be the thing to fight at the very end.
Yeah, that was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah,
I was actually leaning towards it being a figment of Jack's imagination.
That's kind of what I thought it would be too.
Yeah, like the guilt, the everything just weighing on him, and just manifested until this sort of dark, looming figure that was always following him. But at the end of the episode, turns out Ashi could actually see it, and it. They had a little scuffle, so I was like, oh, okay, so that's what it is.
Now, if I'm going to go full-on obnoxious fan theory revisionist here, I would have forgiven it being an actual entity if it was kind of like the manifestation of all that Jack has repressed and run from over the past 50 years. If during the fight, the helmet gets knocked off and it was the other Jack that we saw in the previous episodes, the one that was discouraging him and urging him to end his own life, just to bring that full circle. So that when Jack struck him down, it would be him finally putting those worries to rest.
Cool.
Yeah. Like his internal fighting, his own internal monologue.
Just connect those two little dots for me, please, please, please.
But yeah,
what it is adore what they've done with Aku this season.
Oh yes.
He's still that goofy, like Kyle said, but he's really creepy, too, especially at the end of the sequence when he's with his own personal therapist, and they're both looking straight at the camera, and that oppressive cord starts to build, and it's just, you are unsettling, and I love it.
I was really worried that because of the darker tone of the season, over the story, I thought that when Aku returns, he was going to be a little, going to take him a little bit more seriously. Like he's a little darker and scarier. And to start it off, they have him talking to himself. And I was so happy. I just had a big smile on my face. And yes, this is exactly how I remember this character. And it's really fun that they didn't lose that along the way, especially after so many years.
And then just to make sure that you don't think he's lost his edge, when the armies attack his tower, he wipes them out with absolutely no effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's playful. It's childlike in the way that he's annihilating people left and right. And that's fun in a horrible way. I mean, not that, you know, wholesale slaughter is a fun thing, but you know what I mean?
And he just does it and he's like bored while doing it because it just has no excitement for him anymore. Does nothing for him. It's just what he does. It's just rote. It's like a job.
So while we're talking about impressions and desires and critiques of the season, let's go to, I guess, what was one of the big points of that particular episode, the Scotsman. Should he have stayed dead, or are you happy that he's a ghost?
I really want him just to stay dead. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just a morbid person. He came back as a ghost a little too soon. This is like right after.
It seems a little awkward that they killed him and just brought him back as a ghost. It's like, what?
You could have given it at least 5 minutes.
Yeah, why would that happen? Like, it just doesn't make any, it doesn't make any sense why they would do it so quickly. It's like, I mean, if you wanted to keep this, it's like, was there someone who, like, someone on the writing team who wanted to keep the character and someone else who didn't and was like, okay, if you let me kill him, then you can bring him back as a ghost. And then they did it in the same episode. It's like, okay, it just doesn't I don't understand. If they were going to keep him around, why did they kill him off? It's just weird.
Well, you saw how old he was.
Sure. I guess They brought him back. They wanted to get him back to being younger, but I don't know. It's strange. Strange decision.
I mean, I adore The Scotsman. I love how absolutely over the top, ridiculous, stupid, offensive he is.
Yeah.
But I would have been happy if he had died and stayed dead, because I felt that was the perfect way to go out. He leads an entire army. He has sired a literal army of Scottish Amazons. And his last few minutes are just talking smack to Aku without flinching. And then he gets taken out by the biggest of bads. I would have been perfectly fine with that.
Yeah,
I've been more than happy with that result, too.
It's one heck of a way to go out, too. So, I mean, that's a big moment. I don't know why they just kind of immediately shattered it. But, oh well. Maybe they'll do something interesting with him in these last four episodes.
He'll come back around.
We'll see.
And it seems like he's going to be gathering an army for Jack to join. So I would love to have a little exchange between him and Jack. And, look at you, you haven't aged a day. Yes, but you're dead. I know, and I look better than you.
You might have just quoted the dialogue before the episode even actually happened. You might have done it, Ian. You might want to submit your resume to them and say, hey, I can write this. I've already written this, see?
We'll see how it goes.
Yes.
But aside from Jack, Chevelle, what else has piqued your interest animation-wise these days?
Oh, you mean just in general animation outside of Samurai Jack?
Yeah, what are you watching right now? What do you recommend? What's good?
I wish I could recommend a lot. It's just that I've been so busy since the beginning of the year, I haven't had much time to watch anything. So I've just been rewatching old shows, just putting it into the background as I just work away. Mm-hmm. I just recently, because of the podcast that I'm on, we watched Toonami. So I'm just watching shows on Toonami like the entire block sometimes if I'm not going out till 3. So anything that's on that block I've been watching, good or bad. So we have Samurai Jack, there's Dragon Ball Super, there's Kai, I think now there's Tokyo Ghoul. So I just absorb a little bit of everything now. I wish I was watching newer shows or newer animes that could be kind of interesting, but yeah, anything that's on the Toonami block, I've been watching.
Okay. I would recommend, if you get the chance, to track down Wakfu. It's a French cartoon based off of MMO. And
I've heard it before. I never watched it, though.
Not to be too much of a purist, but I would say get the English subtitles, because I've heard nothing but mixed reviews at best.
I heard of it. Heard of how bad the English dub was, actually. That's how I heard of the show for the first time. Be sure to watch the subtitled version.
The amount of creativity in the show is absolutely astounding. And season one is a little monster of the weekish at first, a little slow, but then once it finds its footing and really gets going, oh, buddy, does it take off. And the villain for the first season is easily, for me, within the top 5 villains of fiction, period. Nox is fantastic.
I would say, is it on Netflix?
The English version is on Netflix. I don't know if it has the subtitle option.
I don't think so.
I mean, you can power through the bad dub if you absolutely have to, but what about you, Kyle? Are you watching anything right now?
The only animated thing I'm watching would be the 2012 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, which is in its 5th and final season. I believe it's its final season. Seems sounded like it from what I was reading.
Yep.
What's that?
Yep. It's wrapping up.
Yep.
Yeah, this is going to be its last season. I've enjoyed it. There's definitely some things to complain about with it. I guess just some of the way some of the characters are kind of the way some of the characters are treated, for lack of a better term, kind of sits poorly with me. But I have overall definitely enjoyed it. It's a show that I want to do a whole Bumblecast about at some point, which I think we've talked about before, Ian. So we could talk about it. We could definitely spend a whole show talking about it, but it is.
I need to get caught up on the current season, but yeah, we'll get that done.
The new season is actually pretty cool. It's they kind of rebranded it a little bit, changed it to Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, more in the style of the. Like the self-contained stories that the Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics had. Mm-hmm. So where it's more like a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Episodic?
I guess, kind of. It's these self-contained story arcs. They kind of connect together, but like each, like every four episodes, I think there's a different storyline. Mm-hmm. But it's all in continuity, and it's all they're all connected together, and I think they're doing a really good job with it. They changed the theme song, and I quite enjoy the new theme song, as it's a kind of a the whole intro is very much inspired by the James Bond style animation and credit sequences.
I thought it was a big shout out to the opening to Cowboy Bebop.
It might be that too. Yeah.
That right there tickled me no end.
Yeah, and there's also the new, very jazzy rendition of the theme song, which I quite enjoy very much. So, what about
you?
I just realized, really
quickly, there is a show I've been watching, an anime. Someone got me into it, but JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Huh.
I need to get into that. I've had friends screaming at me for months. You need to watch it. You need to read it. So,
so weird. It's like the title is accurate. It's so
yeah.
Part two with Joseph Joestar. That's the main protagonist of that that story arc. And I watched it on Toonami, and I didn't get it at first. In fact, I didn't like it. I think it's like this is too weird for me. But every episode that went by, I got sucked in, and it's like, I want to know what this is about. There's vampires.
It's a fever dream with a plot.
Men who lives for thousands of years, and there's something that they call hormone, which is a power they have by breathing. And it works however they want it to work. I swear, there's no rule. There's no like, okay, is there a rule? A rule book to how to use hormone, because you guys seem to be doing whatever you want with it. So yeah, it's a great, it's bizarre, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It took me a few episodes to get into it, but yeah, I gotta admit, it sucked me in.
I was actually kind of confused when people started talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, because to me, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is a Capcom fighting game from 1999 for the Dreamcast.
Yeah, on the Dreamcast. And that's how I first played the game.
Yeah, and I'm like, "What? Wait, what's going on? Are people playing the game again? Is that like, are people getting excited? There was like was there a recent re-release or something that people are getting excited about? I'm like, no, it's a whole new anime. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know if it's actually new or if it's just they're finally localizing it or what was going on there. Do you know?
No, I just been watching it on TV.
Okay.
catching it week by week.
I was just curious because I'm like, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, that's from the 90s. I remember that game from the Dreamcast. I don't know. It's weird. Do you know, Ian? Do you know anything about that?
This is an uneducated guess, so folks, please let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's a very long-running manga series.
Okay.
That's had an anime that I think is decently faithful to the manga, and that it's just now getting a concentrated dubbing effort. There might have been previous efforts in the past, but I think this is the first time that they're really making a big push for it after the, you know, awkward teenage years that was dubbed anime in the 90s. Yeah, now that we have quality and consistency. So I need to check it out myself. So maybe that's the next thing I'll binge on.
Anything else either of you checking out?
I think that's it. For me, anyway.
And we've got an ad from our good friend Daniel H., who at this point is not just a patron of the show, but basically our patron saint. He'd like to give a signal boost to the Gary Sinise Foundation, named after and started by one of his favorite actors, being Gary Sinise. The Gary Sinise Foundation offers support and relief for members of the armed forces, first responders, and their families. Whether it's through music, the theater, public appearances, or donating supplies and training, the foundation goes above and beyond in giving back to those that have given so much. Please click the link below to find out more. That's www.GarySiniseFoundation.org. That's GarySiniseFoundation.org, and we'll have the link in the YouTube description below. Thank you very much for that, Daniel. Hopefully folks will head out that way.
All right, then. So we're going to move on into the Q&A. First up, we're going to get priority questions. Those are from folks who are over at patreon.com/bumblecast. Anyone can ask a question either on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleGRCB with hashtag bumblecast. But the patrons, they get to the front of the line. Now, Chevelle, since you're the guest on the show, would you like to ask something?
Let me see. Yes. Why blue?
Oh, you cut out there.
I'm sorry.
Why blue? Okay.
Why blue?
Because not red, but perhaps green. Some would yellow, but I... No. I blue. Yes.
I was, you know, it's for almost 4 days. I was thinking, like, what could be a question I can ask? I couldn't think of anything. I just wanted to support you guys, come in the show and have some fun. I guess this is a simple, very, very simple question. I don't know if you've been asked this before, but when you write a long going story arc, I always wanted to curious about the process of that, because I'm thinking of writing my own little story, but I was thinking of having subplots here and there, so it doesn't seem like there's just one continuous, I guess, boring action after another. And I was wondering, how do you handle something that's fairly large, let's say for a graphic novel or something, or is a continuous story, like how do you handle long arcs, like this is going to last 12 issues or for a whole year or something like that?
There's no tried and true way to do it, but the way I would approach it is first step back and look at the main plot line that you're plotting out here and see where you're going with it. You know, this is where you start, this is where you end, and this is what you want to accomplish in the middle. And how is it that the characters arrive to those points so that it isn't your plot dragging them from point A to point B to point C, but how is it that they make their decisions that bring them towards that end goal? Once you have that generally mapped out, and for me, I'm more of a visual person, so I like to draw like timelines and diagrams, and looks like some crazy conspiracist board with all these lines going everywhere. But with the subplots that you want to do, see, you know, where do those organically grow out of the main plot line? What character is involved, and how does it fold back into the main plot line? Because what might be an interesting vignette that you want to touch upon may not necessarily fit where you think it's going to. So if you have that visual timeline and see where everything fits together, you can see, yeah, maybe I need to move this over here. Maybe this would serve better as a flashback. Maybe I just need to cut it all together. And that hurts. Oh, it hurts every time. Sting never goes away. And also look at what your page count is, because that will limit what you can do very, very quickly. And you want to make sure that you're telling as much information per page as you can without it becoming just a book that happens to have doodles on the sides. So I would say, if you're approaching a long-form narrative, go at it with a more structural outset. Don't think of it as you know, this is how I'm writing it. Think of it as how I'm building it, how I'm, you know, putting the Lego pieces together. And then see where your subplots might fit in or grow out from there. Okay. If that makes any sense at all.
That makes sense, Jesse.
Okay, good. Kyle, do we have other priority Q&A?
Yes, sir, we do. Let's go ahead and get into some of them. This first one comes from Chris A. How did the Archie Sonic fans react when you rebooted the comic series?
Let's split some hairs here. I didn't reboot it. I was made to do it. Because, boy, that wasn't in under my control at all. I would say it was a mixed bag. There were those that were very upset, and I completely understand that. And there were others that were very excited about a new direction. There was a lot of confusion about what was going on at the time, but that can't be helped. I think the end result is that while a lot of people were miss what was where we were going with the old continuity, most folks enjoyed the new and enjoyed where it was going. I wish I could go back and finish up what I was doing back then, but that's the entire point of Lost Hedgehog Tales, so we'll get to that eventually.
And our last priority Q&A question comes from none other than Sam Cybercat. If Capcom gave you complete free reign to write for a Quake Woman game set in the Mega Man universe, how would you go about it? it's a very open-ended
hadn't
question.
Thought of that.
It's a very open-ended question. Basically, if you were
if
given
I
the task
make a
of
Quake
making
Woman spinoff, how do?
Yes, yes.
Off the top of my head, I'd like to do something, I guess, that would be reminiscent of the Mega Man core gameplay, but do something a little different, so it isn't just Mega Man with a Quake Woman skin. Since she was supposed to be for geological survey and seismic analysis, maybe give her more of a puzzle platformer and less of a shooter.
So you're talking about a Mr. Driller remake?
Maybe. It's hard to say off the top of my head, but probably less running and gunning, more digging and jumping.
I don't know. Mega
Man
does
just because.
Mega Man does a lot of jumping, though. I mean, he is jump and shoot man.
I realize that, but he's more, you know, jump so that you don't die. Maybe have her more jump to explore.
Okay, I understand. All right, let's get into some standard Q&A from the big list of questions. This one comes from DaBigRG. How did Shard get his name?
Oh, there was a lot of back and forth on that one. I think we had like five separate names in the running at one point. But I think we settled on Shard because he had that Shard of Chaos Emerald in him. And because it kept with the S-sounding name that the Hedgehog seemed to keep with, you know, Sonic, Silver, Shadow. Mephiles kind of bucked the trend, but he was weird anyway.
He's barely a hedgehog. I don't know what that means, but... And next question comes from Uwai. Suppose Sega reintroduces old characters with a new design, Capcom releases some important details that contradict with the comic, or anything else that can't easily be fixed. How would you handle that?
It depends on what it is. Wardrobe changes would be the easiest. Like, let's take Mighty and Ray, for example, who had their most current redesign by Leah Baker. I think those are great looks for the characters, but if Sega were to come around and say, hey, we're actually bringing them back, and now they look completely different. If it was just a change of clothes, then it's like, okay, they changed their clothes. If they were complete redesigns, I don't know. Reconstructive surgery? Genesis Portal?
Ignore it.
Genesis Warble. I don't know. It depends on the context and how much time I have to bend over backwards. That's the joy and the fear of working on a licensed property, is that you are at the whim of the licensor.
Yeah. You don't control what happens. So if they redesign the character suddenly, that's the character now. You could just ignore it. I mean,
say if they actually do redesign a character, it should do an Iron Man 2 and just introduce him as if nothing has changed.
It's perfect. That's what they always do.
Mighty, you're green. That's right. I'm here. Just get over
it. Pretty much. And our last question comes from Boosalarian Theme. Will we see more stories featuring a singular character focused? One problem I have with the book as of late is that there are too many players at one time.
I try to find a balance between more central character focus and ensemble focus. One of the things I run into a lot is if I do a story and one character isn't mentioned or doesn't show up or doesn't have the appropriate amount of screen time as decided by somebody, I get an earful. And with a cast as big as the Freedom Fighters is, it's really hard to find room for everybody. So I do want to find moments where we can focus on one or two at a time and really build on them, because when you have the big ensemble pieces, you miss a lot of the nuance. So it's something I'd like to do. Whether or not I get to do it, that's another question.
Yes. And that's going to do it for the Q&A for this episode. Have anything else we need to touch on before we shout out to our patrons?
Before we get to that, Chevelle, is there anything you'd like to plug? Anyone you'd like to promote? Anything that you've got going on that you want to let people know about?
Absolutely. Do you mind if I plug my Twitter and the podcast that I'm on?
Yes.
Please, go for it.
Do it. Do it.
So I have a Twitter account. You can find me at @schevelle. It's S-C-H-A-U-V-E-L. And that's at Twitter. As for the podcast I'm on, I'm actually on a podcast called Podnami, where we watch the entire block, and as soon as it ends, we start our podcast. Of course, that's recorded and put it up on a Tuesday, but it's Podnami at Libsyn. That's Podnami at Libsyn. That's LIBSYN.com. So I hope you guys listen and enjoy our shows as we're half awake doing the entire block.
It's a perfect time to record a podcast.
If you're looking for anything else done by me, head over to bumbleking.com or on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
And you can find what I'm doing on Twitter at KyleJCRB, or head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of this podcast and many others, including my other show, Game Fuel, which will be having its final episode. We'll have just had its final episode this past weekend. But don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. I'll still be on 8bitx.com every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So don't worry, you'll just have to tune in to see what's up, to see what's going on, because there's some stuff going on. But don't worry, it's good stuff.
Intriguing.
Yes.
We're going to wrap up the show with a big shout out to all the patrons who make this show possible. You guys are absolutely phenomenal. Thank you to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, congratulations again. Chevelle, Chris A., Demo, Duiz Dizdin, John B., Sam Cybercat, Deus Miles, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell T., Samuel B., Justin G., Jennifer R., Andrew F., Frobman, Candy, for now, John M., Yeshivarovich 9X, Alex P., and James K. You guys are phenomenal.
Yes. Especially Chevelle.
Especially Chevelle.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us for this show.
It's a lot of fun.
You might have cut out there, actually.
Oh, I said thank you. I had a lot of fun.
So glad you did. This is going to wrap it up for Bumblecast episode 42. We'll see you this Friday for Bumblecast Gaming Live for all our patrons, every other Monday for Bumblecast Gaming episodes, and Bumblecast Regular every other Monday. Have a good night, everybody!
Skibbity-bop-bop, skibbity-bop-bop-doo, bop-bop-doo, skibbity-bop-bop-doo. Wait, that's not our theme song. Never mind.
I shouldn't have done the Aku intro. You're Kyladoosh. Kylamooch.
Kyladoosh? Wow.
Yeah, I stepped in that one, didn't I?
Well, at least you finally admit it.
Scaramooch. It's hard to make Kyle fit with Scaramooch, okay?
Kylamooch? Kylamooch?
There we go. Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download. That's not going in the blooper reel.
Why not?
We're a family show.
We are? Why?
So we can stand out against the others.
Oh, that's no fun.